Well, I was going to say, there's a sign-in sheet as well over there.
Yeah, it'll be
four women.
Oh, okay.
Yes, I saw that.
And so before we start the meeting tonight, just some housekeeping things. If you are here from the community and you're not one of the presenters, please sign in the back. There are also copies of the agenda back there for you. If you think you'd like to speak during this meeting, please fill out one of the forms with your name and address, and we will call you to the podium at the appropriate time.
Donna, there's no forms over there to fill out.
Okay, if you would, we'll find a piece of paper for you to
Speaker forms.
Yeah, we have to have forms if they want to speak.
Physical forms? Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, if no one speaks,
I thought it was just a sign-in sheet.
No, you have to have a form if they want to speak, if they want to ask us a question.
Yeah, similar to the
city council meeting.
Okay.
Same form.
Same thing for the city council meetings. Okay, gotcha.
And if you have cell phones or pagers or anything else that makes noise, could you please put them on vibrate or turn it off, please, so there are no interruptions to the meeting. And with that, I would like to call the meeting of the University City Historic Preservation Commission to order. Could we call the roll, please?
Yes. Donna Leach?
Here.
Esley Hamilton?
Here.
Donna Marin?
Here.
Christine Mackey Ross?
Here.
Sandy Jacobson?
Here.
Bill Chilton?
Okay, so our first item of business on the agenda is approval of the minutes of the Historic Preservation Commission meeting of Thursday, August the 16th, 2018. Are there any questions or comments on the minutes? Do I hear a motion for approval?
So moved.
So moved. Do I hear a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Okay, the minutes pass unanimously. Is there any old business that we have from this
meeting? I don't believe so.
Okay. New business, file number HPC 18/07383. Joseph Marcus Extinet Systems Incorporated. And we have a presentation tonight. Would you like to introduce that? Staff, introduce that, please.
Yes, there's going to be two cases tonight by the same applicant. They're both antenna permits, wireless communication facilities. The zoning ordinance currently states that if there's a new build or an antenna wireless facility within 300 feet or within a historic preservation district, then the Historic Preservation Committee has to review it, and then it goes to council. So this is a part of that process. Full disclosure, that process is likely going to change moving forward. There's some strict timelines in the antenna permit process that is federally and state mandated, and having two commissions look at it is putting a lot of pressure on the limited time that we do have to review those. But that being said, we're going to look at, actually, 7491 Amherst, and then 7206 Pershing.
And who is presenting tonight?
Is
the podium, please?
Not the applicant, it is the representative.
Yes. Yeah. My name is Matt Damon. I'm with Black and Beach. I'm filling in for Joe Marcus, who's the applicant.
And I have the rendering.
Great. I might need these. But have you got those?
Well, this is for Amherst. We'll do that first.
That's correct.
Okay. We'll do this.
So, we have a proposal in front of you tonight, in which we're proposing a small cell wireless antenna on behalf of the Extinet for the property at 7491 Amherst Avenue. It's on near the corner of Hanley and Amherst. On an existing inland utility pole. In this site here on the left is the existing Ameren pole. We have an agreement with Ameren to replace and install a new hammer pole that's 5 foot taller, which you see on the right. Amber has a, we never make an agreement with a service provider or infrastructure provider. They have a rule where they won't, they'll replace the pole for you, but they have to increase the height. They can't lower it because that is prohibited because of the lines there. So what they're doing is we're proposing to replace the pole with a 5 foot taller pole to give equipment and antenna on top. So this is all going to be on the pole with no ground add equipment. And if you're not familiar with these, I don't know if you've seen these before. These are being rolled out across the country all at once. It's for densification for for your cell phone, mainly for data. And so what we're doing is we're gearing up for 5G and this densification and lowering these and filling these gaps in coverage require us to, whenever possible, attach to existing infrastructure like streetlights and utility poles. So this is a proposal that we need this particular area to cover for coverage and capacity purposes. So rather than propose a new pole, which most jurisdictions kind of ramp on, it's best when if we can locate on existing infrastructure like this. So we're not creating new poles, we're attaching to a new pole, but or an existing pole, but they're going to replace it with a taller one. So, you know, next slide. So this, these are just showing different views of that pole. You know, I've seen these, I don't know if you've seen these, but I've seen these facilities, and it's hard to tell if they're new because they just kind of blend in, and most people don't even pick these out unless you're looking for them. So, again, this is by demand by the service provider that they need this particular area and the importance of the coverage and capacity. And again, 5G's on the horizon, and that's the next technology or the next level of your service for your cell phones, which the amount of speed is going to be exponential compared to what we have now. So that's it. Yeah, I'll take any questions.
Is there a reason why they picked that particular site?
That's a good question. We have RF engineers, radio frequency engineers, who look at coverage and capacity. And it's not arbitrary. Some people think, well, it's arbitrary. Why are you picking this area? Why don't you go on a cell phone or existing cell tower? And it doesn't work that way. The best analogy I can think of is, what if you need a street light because there's not enough light in your area? So you propose a street light, but then someone says, well, why don't you move the street light down here where you can attach to this other street light? It's like, well, it kind of beats the purpose if we actually need that service in that area. So it may look arbitrary, but really it's not. And each service provider needs certain areas of capacity and coverage, and a lot of things that dictate that are buildings, topography, usage. So there's a number of factors that go into determining these locations. And also, one other thing that's difficult is Ameren just won't let you go on any Ameren pole. We have very strict guidelines on which Ameren poles you go on. So it's really hard to find an existing pole that we can go on.
Since technology moves at a fast rate, even though we're talking about 5G right now, the point is another year or two, we could be talking about 6G or something. What is to be anticipated in the future? If this is only for 5G, what's going to happen when it goes further?
I'm afraid I can't answer that question. Typically these, I think what 4G came out about 10 years ago.
Right.
I cannot tell you how far 6G is away and what that would do to the technology. So we focus on the 5G obviously being deployed in more urban areas because those are most cost effective because those are the highest amount of users and everything. But most people, it's The reality is that the demand is out there, or else we wouldn't be proposing these. I mean, everybody has their cell phone, and everybody's on it, and everybody wants better service. It's not going anywhere. So I know people frown upon it sometimes, like, everybody spends too much time on their phone, but it is what it is.
Well, my concern is not that. It's like, we're looking at a pole here, you know, on a street, you know, in a historic labor. We're talking about density. We're also talking about the possible trees, maybe not right at that corner.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's kind of like, well, if this is what it looks like for 5G, what's it going to look like? Or is it going to go taller, or are you going to have to go to something else?
Well, the trend is lowering them. If you remember, 20 years ago, we were proposing 250-foot macro cell towers. And now, I mean, over the years, they've been coming down shorter and shorter. And so that is a very good question. This type of technology in the spectrum that a lot of service providers use require the antennas to be lower because of the frequency shorter. So they need to be closer to the users. So, I mean, the trend is moving down. Like, I'm not an RF engineer. I can't answer you if it's going to be lower. To me, that's better if I were concerned about the aesthetics of the community, because the lower the poles, the less intrusive that is when you look at the skyline or anything like that. But
might be. We're here to, what does it look like in the neighborhood?
I understand your concerns. And we're doing everything we can to make it sleek and streamlined. I mean, if you, again, going back to the cell towers, those were pretty obtrusive back then. And so, We shroud stuff and we paint it to make it match the existing structure. So it is getting better, but everything's subjective in what you see there. So we hopefully it's okay for the designer, at least acceptable to the neighbors. So I don't know.
And were the neighbors queried on
the
putting the pole in the neighborhood?
I'm sorry, what was your question?
Did someone query the neighbors?
Ask to talk to the neighborhood.
I'm not aware of any. yeah, you have to forgive me. I'm filling in for Joe Marcus.
Well, that's right.
Last minute. I'm not aware if he talked to the neighbors. If they're already here and I didn't speak, I'm sure they might be here to answer that question. So.
From what I know, when I talked to Joe, and Sinan brought that up, as far as if we can write in our ordinance that that's required with these new poles, and I don't think we can require it, because it's not something that requires a public hearing notice that we mail out to the 185-foot radius of the site. So as far as I'm aware, too, the neighbors haven't been queried, but I did put a public hearing notice sign on that property about a week ago.
So they were notified.
They were notified, okay. Yeah, visually.
Did anybody call you?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's really going to be noticeable. Mm-hmm. I think the street lights are the thing that's more character defining in the neighborhood, and not the utility poles.
So are you saying that utility poles would be preferred in this type of neighborhood or historic neighborhoods?
Yeah, I said that the street, people get concerned about the street light designs because they consider that part of the character of the neighborhood,
sure.
But not the telephone poles.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think
so,
where people look up that tall, too, as tall as that pole is.
Yeah.
I'm not saying they wouldn't, but I'm just saying I think the percentage is more people are not going to look up that high.
Yeah, exactly. And in my opinion, on utility poles, cell phone poles, you could just assume that that's part of the equipment for that use. It blends in because you expect that type of equipment on those poles. I understand that perfectly. So.
Yeah.
Well, and I think given the character of Hanley Road, it's not exactly a quaint.
Yeah, and truly, this is outside of that historic district. It's just this is that 300-foot buffer.
Yeah,
and
right
that's.
On that edge.
And that's kind of where this next one is going to be as well. I'm not saying we should move on, but it's kind of the similar thing where it's not directly in this really historical spot. It's just kind of driving into it. And
well, the biggest thing is, which used to be a synagogue, which is across the street from that. I live in that neighborhood. With small children, there is a lot of traffic, you know. And more people are looking more at like about a 6 foot tall level and down than they are looking more up, because there is no street light. There's not even a stop sign at that intersection. So
yeah, I mean, it works both ways. It works for us to attach the utility poles because, again, you're right. You're not really looking up that high. I mean, the average poles for this type of technology is like between 35 and 40 feet. So it's it's expected, I guess. And so.
And if the utility pole has to be replaced, that's
yes, we pay for that. Another pro for this, or at least that works in favor for the city, is that whatever the condition of the existing utility pole is, you get a brand new pole. So.
Okay.
Any other questions or comments?
Chairperson, do these require two separate actions, or can they both be approved with one motion since they're essentially...
Well, they're actually, they're two separate numbers. Yeah, because
okay.
They're two separate applications. So, do we have any comments from the community on application A? Okay. Would anyone like to propose a motion on this project?
I make a motion that we accept and approve the plans for this utility pole as shown.
Yeah. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Okay, so file number HPC 0733 passed unanimously. Could we go on to our email, HPC 18-07380? This is the one you need to mail to us.
So this one, yeah, obviously we have a second application. This one is located, it's the rear side of 7206 Persian Avenue. It's not, I'm going to go to the next slide. This is basic on the left, again, you have the existing conditions. It's on here, just basically the same thing. We're replacing the utility pole with a 5 foot taller pole and equipment. Next slide. And it's just a different view. It's kind of on the back side of the property, I think. So, near an alley. So, it kind of, again, blends in. The area, in my opinion, so that's basically it.
Let me show you where this is on the map.
Did you happen to talk to this homeowner that you're in the back of about this?
I believe Joe did, but I didn't get a chance to talk to him about this either. They should know about that. It's going through.
What is required for the property owner, or whoever's property this is on, we require a lease or proof of ownership of some sort by the applicant as a part of the application. So they're made aware, at least that way.
But the homeowner had no comment of any kind?
They didn't notify me. I put another notice sign out there as well. So it's in their backyard, essentially, by their garage, and I wasn't contacted. So they either knew about it already or didn't have a comment.
I'm surprised that that's not part of the right-of-way of the road. But
yeah.
That's actually private property there?
Yeah, it's weird, but
it's barely. Yeah, when you look at the right of way, we had a discussion about it because the right of way ordinance is different than the just the normal zoning approval. Going through the right of way would have been lot more extensive, I think. Yeah.
Probably.
Yeah,
it would have.
Okay. Well, I think it's, yeah, in terms of the impact on the community, it's barely noticeable there.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Any other questions or discussion on Part B? Do we have anyone from the community who would like to discuss the issue?
Sure, if I could just ask a certain question about
and are you, excuse me, are you a citizen?
I'm a citizen, and I live at 7200.
Okay. Come up to the podium.
Okay. We'll get you on record.
Okay.
And if you would give your name and address.
Right. I'm Kurt Kumpelman, and I live at 7200 Pershing Avenue. So this would be catty corner back of the property that we own.
Right.
And so I was wondering what the timing of the installation would be, and what sort of construction trucks and things would be in that area for what period of time.
I think it's probably just for the pole replacement is what you're
right.
thinking about. Is that correct?
Right.
So would you like to address that, please?
Typically, it's no sooner than 6 months. So it's November now. You're looking late spring, early summer. I strongly recommend that you contact Joe Marcus.
Okay.
I think the applicant information he has and bought with him. So yeah, he should be able to give you a better number of date.
Yeah, if you call, I can give you his information if it's hard to find.
Yeah, but the other question was how long?
How long does it take?
Yeah.
Oh, it's really fast. I think it, new poles are a lot easier than. Because Ameren does the work, so I assume they can get done in a day. It's not a little disruptive.
Yeah. 1 to 2 days
would be a big deal.
But
again, this would be another question we would probably talk with Joe, because I don't know between Texas Ed and Ameren what type of relationship they have as far as getting work done. But it's almost immediate.
Okay.
Sir, in the past,
okay.
I've noticed that Ameren takes 1 to 2 days unless weather conditions become a priority.
Thank you.
Any other questions or comments? Would someone like to move on this application?
I move we accept this application as is for the telephone pole at the corner of Pershing, 7261 Pershing?
7206.
7206 Pershing. Except as is.
Do I hear a second?
A second.
The motion has been made and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passed unanimously. Thank you. Next item on the agenda is other business, and we have no one in the audience who wants to comment. So we'll go on to reports. Our council liaison report, do you have anything to report today?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a couple of things. The current issue of Roars Magazine has two things that I'd like to draw everyone's attention to. There's the Stormwater Task Force has submitted, or has a questionnaire in there, and if you know of anyone that is exposed to any flood issues, if you could encourage them to complete that form and return that. Or they can do it online. We'd appreciate that. And then also the library is holding two focus group meetings in the very near future, and that information is in there. If people are interested in looking at what the library is up to, they may be going for a bond issue or a tax levy in April of next year, and they're requesting input from the community. And then the council did vote to start the process of the development area at 170 in Olive, and we had the first reading of those bills Monday evening. I don't know when the second and third reading will be. I don't know if it'll be at the next council meeting or not. And then we were talking about Ameren UE, and I don't know if many of you have noticed that the lights are out on Delmar between Hanley and North and South, and they've been out for 6 or 7 months now, and apparently Ameren can't find the underground lines, so they've had to go to St. Louis County and get a new permit to put up new lines. So it's not funny, but that's the way it is. And so they're working on trying to get those lights repaired, and they've been doing it for 6 or 7 months now. It's been since early summer that they were out. And then we just found out that lights are out on Forsyth and between Big Bend and into Clayton, and they're working on those as well. So if you hear of any lights that are out, we're trying to get Ameren to fix them. And that's all I have to report. Thank you.
Thank you.
Can I have a question? Go ahead.
Yes.
I've got a question about the library.
Yes.
And I was wondering if it was considered, since we own and run our own library here, but libraries take a lot of money, effort to keep going as we get moving with technology. Has there ever been a discussion to have the library maybe be like co-owned or co-run or something, maybe with the help of Washington University or St. Louis County Library, so that we can have a really good library, but lowering the cost on the average resident?
I know that St. Louis County, the library staff and board have made some overtures to the county library to help with sharing some things, and the county is not really wanting to do that, and it's got a lot to do with the taxes that the people in the county pay that we're not paying into in terms of for the county library. There is the consortium that exists. We have a sharing with Kirkwood, Richmond Heights, I think Webster Groves, Florissant, and I think there's even one other. So if you ever need a book or an item, you can go online and you can see if the item is at the other libraries, and there is a sharing with them. And the library staff and board are always trying to set up so that we can share with the other, with our neighbors in St. Louis County. But I don't think there's been any discussion about trying to commingle all of the collections together and just have one library system. I think that they want to pretty much stay separate.
Today it tends to be more of a technology question.
Yes.
Than a book question.
Yes.
More than the paper. And so that usually runs into computers and tech people available to actually run it. That seems to be the biggest part of the game.
Yes, in fact, they were just looking at the budget last night, and I was amazed at how much their computers cost and stuff like that. And again, they've tried to do some sharing with St. Louis County for some online information so that we can get more online books and online podcasts, online movies, and St. Louis County is not wanting to do it. But you are correct. The electronic, I think that 10 years ago, the library, when they were looking at a new acquisition, it would be a book, and it would be $12 or $20. Now when they want to look at that book, they have to buy the rights to the electronic format and several different ways and methods, and it can cost up to $72 or $80 per book to be able to get that. So they're always looking for ways to share those costs with other libraries and to share who has access to that. And some of that has been discussed with how they can maximize having things available for those of us that use the library and everyone in the community, as well as minimize their costs on different things.
Well, I think those of us who are interested should definitely attend one of the focus groups. Another thing is maybe go to some of the county council meetings or bring it up with, I think Hazel Irby is one of our representatives.
Yes.
And, let them know your concerns about this.
Yes. And I believe that, I know that we also have, I think that if you're a resident of St. Louis County, you can also use the St. Louis City Library. And I think that they're talking about working on some type of interlibrary loan with the city library as well. We don't have that currently, but I think that they were trying to get that going as well, to try and have so that we have access to even more materials.
Anybody in the county can get a city card.
Mm-hmm. No, I have a
regard city card. And you can also get a county card, I think.
I believe so.
But I would be strongly opposed to doing anything that would merge our collection with the county collection because it's terrible.
Essay, I didn't mean merge. Everybody's talking about costs these days, and the average resident in university city feels that our taxes, for example, are high enough, and that whatever we appropriate towards the library to keep it running, they're not wanting those to go up, is what I'm doing. And I'm curious how far the council has gone down different avenues as they're looking at this, because the cost is just going to go up, as we're talking about.
Well, the city of Webster Groves did have arrangement with the county, and they withdrew from it because they thought it was too expensive.
It probably is. But we do live in Sales County.
If you want a book, go to the city. The county doesn't have anything. And one of the reasons is, you're talking about needless expense. They won't buy any books unless they need four copies, mm-hmm. because the people who do the cataloging don't want to be bothered in looking up a number if it's only for one book, mm-hmm. which is totally ridiculous.
Yeah, and there are some issues with being able to just take our library and for the council to make decisions, because our library is to a degree its own entity, its own taxing district. And I would say that you're right, our property taxes are high. That's why we need to look to our neighbor to the south and say, hey, Washington University, it's time for you to start doing a little bit more in University City. Yeah.
That was my biggest question about this whole thing, because I knew that there could, maybe, I'm not saying there would be, that there could be something that might be able to work out, probably in the future.
And I would love to be able to have access to Washington University's library, the materials. Mm-hmm. They have a phenomenal library.
Well, they don't stop you from walking in. It's that you just can't just
I thought they had metal detectors. You have to have IDs to get into the library.
But not WashU. The detectors are only to stop you from taking out.
Okay.
Can I just bring it back to the Historic Council? I don't remember, but could you refresh my memory on when demolition begins on the tea house? I think that's been determined.
My understanding is it's supposed to start by the end of this month. I think some of the equipment has already been delivered or is about to be delivered, but I think it's scheduled to start at the end of November.
Okay, thank you.
And that the artwork will be going also.
Good. So there was a reference to that in the future, that this would only go to one committee as opposed to two, one council?
The poll.
The poll.
Yeah. I guess I could go to the question.
Well, so my question is, so in moving forward, there will be other polls that they want to put in, or what, or just anything that's 300 feet from an historic district?
So we're going to be seeing a lot more of these generally. As Mr., I think his name was Demon, said, these are essentially for densification, and they only go roughly 200 to 250 feet. So it's really, really fast connection, but it's very, very limited in its range. In some instances, there are concerns that it can even penetrate thick enough walls. This is just part of 5G. The Missouri legislature's kind of put some of this on us as well. Because essentially, if they're asking for certain approvals that fit within the scheme that Jeff City came up with, we're very, very time limited to have a reason to deny it that fits the law or it's deemed approved. So the concern is if we have to go in front of this committee and then maybe to P&Z, or in front of this committee and then two readings at council or something, that we're going to have so much, I don't want to say bureaucracy, but we're going to have so many layers that we're going to run out of time, and we're not going to have any sort of control, because we're going to be talking amongst ourselves rather than trying to get our hands around some of these.
And meanwhile, it'll be approved because we've taken too long.
Because of the operational law.
Okay. Well, if you're talking about 200 to 250 feet, you're going to have, it's going to look like dots all over in a map.
It's going to be a lot. And that's, part of it is going to be depending on density, because it is about usage. I think one example is you see more of these, I live in the city of St. Louis, so you see a lot more in Soulard, and they went up right before Mardi Gras, and the phone service is way better when there are all those people down there. And you can notice, essentially, where there's going to be a lot of people, there will be a lot more of these. In other parts, in the more residential areas, which I think we're generally more concerned about because they're poles and they're, in those areas, there will be less because people usually use their own home Wi-Fi or some other apparatus to access data. but in certain parts in more commercial areas, you are going to see a lot more of these. And they are trying. We've worked with Joe Marcus, and I represent a few other cities as special counsel, and they have been working with us to make these things smaller than the law would allow. So we are getting positive results, but one of the issues in changing sort of how we're approaching this is we want to be able to essentially to control it before it gets out of hand. Because if we have too many layers, we're not going to be able to see any of our goals met, essentially.
And so it's likely that the Historic Commission is the one that won't see it.
I think that is...
Or would it be case by case?
So, well, the idea would be, for example, these two, with the change, it would be administratively handled. There was concern with the layers, but also council already sees a lot of agenda items, and I don't know exactly how many antenna permits I'm going to have to go through, but it takes up a lot of time, and it's a very specific, small kind of development. When you think about everything going on in University City, to have that amount of time spent on antenna permits is a little disproportionate. And so if we can do it administratively, yeah, and it's going to have the same impact just because of the legal parameters that we have to abide by, we can't really add much more in terms of restrictions than what we're allowed to in that kind of way. But I know we're incentivizing co-location, which is sort of similar to what we saw here. They're replacing a pole, but part of the problem is Ameren requires a 5-foot buffer between their lines and any kind of antenna, and that's just the minimum. And so we had discussed, you know, that's not really a replacement pole. That's a whole new pole with 5 feet on top of it. But when we talked to Joe Marcus, he said, you know, we literally cannot go any lower because of Ameren's restrictions. We would have to build a whole new pole and put it, like, somewhere nearby. And I think that's a bigger impact than just adding 5 feet onto an existing one. So there's a give and take.
And as it relates to University City's historical districts, we will have some more control than just this. We will be able to try to get these smaller or be more concealed or stealthed.
That is the technical term.
Yeah. You can look up some of these installations, and some of them are really masterfully done and artistic even. I know, I want to say in Liberty, Missouri, they put kind of one of these, it was more of a cell tower, but it was near a school, and they made it look like a giant pencil. So it fit with the school, and it was actually like a very unique installation. That
sculpture.
Yeah. So there are ways to, since I kind of work in this, you know, every flagpole you see is often one of these things. They're inside of them. There are other discrete ways that they're hidden, and we're going to be, to the extent that we can under the law, making them either match decorative poles where we have them, making them look more disguised that'll fit with the historical elements. So we're not going to just turn our back and shirk, you know, the unique character of these districts. We're going to see what we can do to protect where we can protect and hold the line there.
Thank you.
Does the staff have anything to report?
No, we just have, I just want to remind everyone, we have an extra meeting this month on November 29th. We're going to be looking at one applicant, and then we won't have a meeting in December. So we won't see each other until January. Yeah.
Okay. Any other discussion, comments? Okay, the meeting is adjourned.
But I'll be absent for that. Yeah. We will have 4 people. So we'll have a quorum. Which
is what we can. Do you have 16 clients? Yeah. You didn't want to speak, right? Yeah.
No.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm just making sure we didn't, you know.
Yeah, no, we don't. Yeah, we do all that up front, I guess.
Never hurts to double check.
I know, I agree. How do I make this stop?
Yes.